Welcome to another episode of Across the Pond, where we discuss the big stories and top investment ideas from the Eurozone and Switzerland. Until recently, the rally in gold appeared unstoppable. The precious metal surged as much as 60% since the start of 2024, its strongest performance since the 2008 financial crisis. In an environment where perceived safe havens were scarce, gold truly stood out. However, over the past weeks, investors have been feeling less nervous. Trade relations between the US and China have improved. A truce between India and Pakistan is holding, and there is mounting pressure for a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine. Does this mean that gold's rally has reached the end of the road? Not necessarily so, according to our commodities experts. I'm Christopher Swan.
And I'm Belinda Peters. To explore what comes next for gold, we're delighted to welcome not just one, but two of our colleagues for this session, Wayne Gordon, CIO APAC, Head of Investment Advisory and Content, and Giovanni Stonovo, CIO Commodity Strategy. Thank you for joining
us. I'll go first. Great to be here, guys.
Hello, also from my side.
Yeah, so just to kick off here, I mean, let's put this gold rally in some kind of context. I mean, we're a little off the top, but this has still been a pretty spectacular run. What are the main forces that have been behind it?
Yeah, look, Chris, you're right. It's been a phenomenal rally for the last couple of years. And actually, it extends back a little bit further than that. The key factors that have been driving it here, because what makes this phenomenal is the fact that gold has been rising at some points while interest rates have also been rising and the US dollar has been on a stronger footing. Now, historically, that's usually the reverse. Usually you find when interest rates are rising, when the dollar is rising, gold tends to be weaker. What's been the difference? The key difference actually started back in 2022 when the United States sanctioned the Russian Central Bank and actually isolated reserves that were outside of Russia. What this did was it created a significant shift in the way global central banks thought about holding, number one, US dollar assets, particularly outside of their jurisdiction, and number two, how they could actually diversify from what potentially could be a risk that could emerge on many different countries. And so what we've seen in the last couple of years is a record amount of buying. In fact, the highest amount of net purchases by central banks since the mid to late 1960s. And that run of central bank buying has continued over multiple years. Now, at the same time, monetary policy has shifted. Monetary policy is now, we are easing monetary policy, we are no longer tightening monetary policy, inflation has moderated to some degree, but of course the arrival of the Trump administration, and not only that, but a very complex geopolitical situation globally has continued to support demand for gold. So not only have we had interest rates falling, which tends to be positive for gold, but also we've had a significant pickup in financial market risk as well as geopolitical risk. And all of these factors combined have lifted gold to a record level. In fact, it touched a new record just the other day of around $3,500 an ounce.
Can I just break one question down for lay listeners, but perhaps including myself, which is, can you describe the relationship between interest rates and maybe the dollar and demand for gold? Right. So why are low interest rates helpful for gold?
Well, effectively, gold is not an interest-bearing asset. So the opportunity cost of an investor holding gold is the risk-free rate. And in this particular case, the risk-free rate referenced is the US Treasury rate. Now, in fact, if you break it down even further, you would argue that it's actually the real interest rate, that is the interest rate minus inflation, which is the most important. And as the real interest rate rises, the opportunity cost of holding gold actually rises along with it, because your alternative is just holding cash, and cash holding cash has a return attached, and that return is the short-term interest rate. We have to remember, though, that gold is a long-duration asset, so it tends to have pretty reasonably large cycles. And so what we find is that the correlation of gold, or the relationship of gold, I should say, to interest rates is sort of straddles both short-term and long-term rates. Nevertheless, again, as rates rise, gold tends to fall. As rates fall, gold tends to rise in that relationship with the next best alternative, which is holding cash and the interest rate attached to cash. Now, gold in itself is denominated in dollars. So the consequence of this is that as the US dollar rises, you tend to be able to, from outside of the United States, you tend to be able to buy less gold with the currency you're holding relative to the US dollar. Alternatively, of course, if the dollar is falling, with the currency you hold, which is appreciating, you can actually buy more gold. So there is this inverse relationship between the dollar being its base currency and alternative currencies outside, which people may be purchasing gold with.
There is another factor that it's worth highlighting in that perspective. On the real rate side, it hasn't worked over the last 3 years. Based on real interest rates, gold should have been trading much lower. And essentially, it's coming back to the element that Wayne mentioned at the beginning, the central bank purchases, which are driven by other factors and not by interest rates, have been the driver that the gold price is trading at record level and not lower than at the moment. And there is a risk with this discussion about this Mar-a-Lago deal that eventually the function of US Treasury could be different at some point in the future, and that is also supporting demand to diversify out of US Treasury into other assets such as gold, and that could keep having a structural break of this historical relationship. We are not saying yet that this is the case, but obviously it's something that we need to monitor going forward.
Okay, thank you. That's very clear. I also have a bit of a side question. To put this whole gold rally in perspective, we mentioned in the intro that it's been the best gold rally since the global financial crisis. And then looking before that, we have to go back to the 1970s for a bigger gold rally. And from what it looks like, it seems like each of these rallies had a different driving force. Could you maybe briefly explain what these are?
Yeah, so look, back in the 70s, because probably almost everybody on this podcast except for me can't exactly remember that, which is maybe you can vaguely, Chris, but in the 70s we had a shift from the Bretton Woods system, where we moved from gold being the basis of currencies to the US dollar effectively being the basis of cross currencies after that.
And in that perspective, Wayne, worth to highlight as well that until the 70s, gold was fixed to the dollar and was a fixed price every year, very stable.
Yeah, exactly right. And so, and this shift also combined with the first oil price shock that the world had seen, and this sharp appreciation of oil prices actually led to a significant spike in inflation. And historically, while gold's ability to hedge against inflation is a little bit mixed, but generally speaking, extreme moves in inflation globally have provided support to gold, or gold has been a good way of diversifying from the impact of sharp rises or severe inflation. That continued through patches of the 70s, where we had small oil price shocks in the mid-70s and then again in the late 70s, all supporting gold prices during that period. After that, though, what we saw was many central banks globally, which were holding large reserves of gold, started to trim those reserves of gold in favor of holding US dollar-based assets, whether that be treasuries, whether that be cash. But they were focusing on the switch in their reserves to be more based just around the dollar. And we actually saw outflows from gold, which put gold under pressure during points in the 1980s. Now, coming forward to the GFC was quite unique, and it's unique from a monetary policy perspective, which, of course, also has a significant impact on gold. Of course, QE, or quantitative easing, had never been used before to address what was the global financial crisis or crises prior to that. So this was the first time that we actually saw interest rates go negative in nominal terms, and there was significant buying by central banks of government-related debt. What that meant was it pushed real interest rates sharply lower, and actually also pushed interest rates along the interest rate curve, particularly 10-year treasuries, also pushed and compressed the level of interest rates all the way along the interest rate curve. That, of course, is very positive for gold because, as we said earlier, the opportunity cost of holding gold is the interest rate. Now, if interest rates are negative, or real interest rates, importantly, are even more negative, in the end, what that tends to do is reduce the opportunity cost of holding gold. And actually, given the fact that then we saw a sharp recovery in growth and inflation began to pick up a little bit, we actually saw people trying to hedge their exposure, not just via protecting against inflation, but also the fact that the US dollar weakened. And so gold also played a role as diversification within the US dollar.
Got it. Great. That's a great answer for sort of gold nerds out there. On this issue of like geopolitical risk, though, I mean, I noticed recently, and it could be my imagination, that, you know, gold has done well even when geopolitical risks are subsiding. But traditionally, obviously, we have this sense that it's a geopolitical hedge. I mean, maybe just a really quick answer on what is going on there, and sort of how does geopolitics drive gold?
Essentially, important is when we talk about the geopolitical factors, does it matter for the global market? Is it mostly a factor which has an impact on the global equity market? And here I would focus on the S&P 500. We have seen events in the Middle East which have triggered some volatility in markets, but never had a big impact on the US equity markets. Don't expect that gold should react differently to all other asset class. If it's a spike in market volatility, like the VIX index, which measures the volatility of the S&P 500, then it has an impact on the gold price. But it's mostly a regional event. Definitely for the people in that region, it's something undesired, but no implication on a global market. And why should gold react to that? So needs to be a global event so that gold reacts to it.
All right. And you've already explained the motivation behind this gold rally and the motivation of central banks. But that one keeps me wondering, what do you expect next? What do you expect this trend to continue?
Look, when I think about the setbacks we've seen that Chris mentioned at the beginning, let's put that into context of what we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months. Remembering that it's actually very difficult to look historically at points where we have had similar dynamics in the global economy as well as with respect to central banks as we look back further than the last probably 2 to 3 years. The point about that is that setbacks we've seen in gold in the last 18 months at least have broadly been between around the 5 to 8% declines. Now, the near 8% decline, of course, we remember quite well with the victory of Donald Trump in the US election last year. And there we saw, as gold rallied into that event, because there was a belief that there could be no outcome from that election for some time, or there would be a contesting of the outcome of that election. People were buying gold as a diversifier and as a I guess a geopolitical sort of hedge as we approached the election. And once it was obvious that the election had been won convincingly by Donald Trump, people clearly started to unwind those positions. However, in all of those setbacks, we have seen continued, if not a step up in buying of gold by central banks. Not only that, but also while we've seen significant unwinding by speculative forces, we have seen broadly large support over the last almost 12 months now from exchange-traded funds or more sort of retail or institutional-type investors. That has continued to support the yellow metal during these sort of drawdowns. Now, what we've seen recently was a drawdown of around 6%, so within that sort of boundary, and then we've seen gold prices stabilizing around the sort of 3,200. Now, we acknowledge that there has been a significant reset of geopolitical and policy-related risk over the last couple of days. That is very clear by the Trump administration in discussing some more active talks they've been having with some Middle Eastern countries. Not only that, but also the potential for some eventual peace between Russia and the Ukraine. And then, of course, the step back from Donald Trump following what's been a pretty difficult month during April, the step back of his reciprocal tariffs and the delays of 90 days. And, of course, adding to that has been the recent more successful talks than probably most of us had anticipated between the US and China. So these things have indeed brought global risk down, and we've seen volatility measures against, you know, the S&P and so forth also compress. So it's not unusual for gold to be reflecting this. It's just a matter of how you consider the outlook for these risks, because we still have a material part of the Trump presidency ahead of us. And at any time, these risks can reemerge, particularly as we approach the end of that 90 days. So it's your, for us, it's the question is simple. Do you need diversification in your portfolio? Do you need insurance in your portfolio? And the answer for us is yes. What would be the drivers from here? Well, clearly, we have an expectation that the US dollar will weaken as the fiscal position becomes even more troublesome for the United States government. We do think that the US dollar will sequentially weaken over the next 12 months. We also believe that the Federal Reserve and other central banks globally will continue to ease rates. Now, all these things are positive for gold, while we still have the shadow of additional geopolitical risks that could reemerge at any time.
Got it. I mean, we could talk about gold all day. I just had like sort of two sort of final questions, which Giovanni, you can sort of summarize. It sounds like what we're saying is, you know, the best days are not necessarily over for gold in the near term, but perhaps you can just also give us just a flavor of, like, you know, how, and I think Wayne was giving some sense of this, but, like, you know, how does gold fit within a portfolio? Why is it a good idea? How much should one hold?
I leave the question on the portfolio to Wayne, because he already mentioned, but for me, the other point that Wayne mentioned about the upside for gold, the prospect of gold globally, how to perceive that in a portfolio context. It's essentially important is the element that gold is perceived by some market participants as a commodity. So if you look at the commodities as a production cost, and if the price is high, you would expect that production increases and fulfills the higher demand and covers that one. This is not really happening. The price needed to produce more gold, to make a profit with gold, is $1,400 or $1,500 an ounce, and the current price is massively higher. It's getting more and more difficult to get gold out of the ground, and that limits the supply growth. So it's essentially the need of additional demand, and that's from central bank and investor. And I guess Wayne pointed out the factors, geopolitical elements, President Trump, a lot of uncertainty here and there, which should still support the demand coming from this investor community. So classically, investors plus central banks. And the element worth to highlight in a portfolio context, and then I leave it to Wayne, is just that gold has a different correlation to other assets. It's most of the time negatively correlated to the dollar, and it tends to outperform gold when, it tends to outperform equities when market volatility rises. So when equities fall, it can outperform these equities, and that's the advantage in a portfolio context. As an insurance, you never want that your house burns down, but you always pay to the insurance company a fee. And when something happens, your house burns down, you go to the insurance company and they pay you out. And that's the role that gold plays in a portfolio context. The expected return over a long time period is muted because we are not hoping to be in a world which is very negative and the environment is pessimistic. But essentially, during these time periods, gold tends to outperform, and otherwise it's low. And therefore, you don't need to have a too extreme elevated allocation, but small allocation due to these different correlations makes sense.
And just to follow on from that, Giovanni, I think it's key that people need to understand how much gold you could hold within a sort of a more balanced portfolio approach, right? And so we've looked at this and we've done quite a bit of modeling around it. And what we've found is in all of those simulations that if a person has a sort of a US dollar base, they're looking at a more balanced portfolio. The overall volatility of the portfolio as a whole improves with that sort of mid-single digit percentage allocated to gold on a longer term basis.
All right. I think this wraps it up. I want to thank you both for taking time to speak to us, and also thank you for our listeners. We know we can't delve into specific securities on these podcasts, but you can explore some of these with your UBS representative. But to sum up, with the Fed likely to cut rates by 75 basis points in 2025, the reduced opportunity cost should make gold even more appealing. And gold's diversification benefits are especially relevant for portfolios with high equity exposure, but for balanced portfolios, we suggest a mid-single-digit allocation as a prudent benchmark. But we'll be back soon with another installment of Across the Pond, and in the meantime, have a great week.
Thank you, guys.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.